Good afternoon, everyone. All right, we're going to go ahead and get started here this afternoon. But I'd like to welcome everybody here today. I'm Dr. Nicole Bean. I am our Vice President of Strategic Initiatives and Special Director. And so we are in, I believe, part three of our Women in Sports webinar series. So I'm honored today to have Assistant Commissioner McCallum from the Rocky Mountain Athletic Conference with us. I also see we have quite a few special guests online, and so I always like to acknowledge them. We have Maria Swanson with the Big 12 Conference. I also see A.D. Rogers from Langston University. Donita Rogers is on here as well. If I say your name, you know, just give us a little wave or a holler.
Holler.
Yeah. Holler. Thank you, Maria. And so I want to make sure that we welcome them. If you've missed their webinar, I suggest that you go online and listen. We record all webinars so that way you can come back and listen as well. We're doing these webinars more so as a way to network for our students. And so students can have the opportunity to meet those in their fields and begin to start that networking, as well as to provide knowledge. And so as Assistant Commissioner McCallum is presenting, I may call on somebody just to offer some further input into it. So we want to welcome you all here. We appreciate you being here today and taking some time out of your day to just unwind and jump online. So I will turn it back over to you.
Awesome. Thank you so much. So my presentation was never going to be very long. Just to kind of give you the background on why I chose this topic, I had my sister's sorority sister reached out to me about a kid that she met who was looking to get into the sports industry. And he was working on his sport management degree. He was doing a lot of things, a lot of great things. But I was like, okay, so what, you know, what is it that you want to do? I don't know. You know, I think I want to coach. I think I want to do this. Okay, so what, you're about to graduate. What kind of jobs have you looked up? Oh, I don't know where to look. And it's like, okay, wait. What's being communicated on campus for those that are in sport management degrees? And where can, like, you know, those of us in the industry kind of step in and kind of fill in? So that's kind of what I wanted to do. So mine is very much geared towards if you're an undergrad and, you know, you're not really sure what you want to do, or you have an idea, but you don't really know all the options that are out there. That's what I'm here to talk about today. So what are my options? Just kind of an overview. Dr. Bean already kind of shared my story. I'm going to share maybe a little bit more, and then we're going to kind of do an overview of sport management opportunities. How you find these opportunities and just kind of where to begin. And then we can end with questions, but also at any point, if you all have questions, one of my favorite things that Zoom does is the little reactions at the bottom. If you want to just kind of like raise a hand or, you know, just kind of get my attention. If you want to stop me right where I am to ask a question, please feel free to. So I am originally from Dallas, Texas. So Alexis, there are worse places you can be, in my opinion. I, just like all of you, I kind of grew up loving and playing sports. It was not the career that I set out for, though. Let me be very clear from the beginning. This is not what I initially went to school for. I played volleyball and ran track at West Texas A&M. I ran track for 4 years, and I played volleyball for two. During my time playing volleyball, I did get to play for two national championships, and on the track team, I was fortunate enough to be part of a freshman class that was the first women's team on campus since like the 70s. So I take a lot of pride in a coach recruiting me and thinking that I was good enough to be a part of that resurgence of the program. I worked as a media assistant in sports information. I basically just kind of helped with volleyball games, like calling out stats. And then I did a little bit of football. And then I did a lot of cross country and track and field, because of course I'm already there. Might as well just write about it when it's all over. I finished with my bachelor's in engineering technology. And so this is where I get into, I did not set out to work in sports, even though I always thought it was an awesome, awesome career path. I wanted to be an engineer. And so I did some internships and I did not enjoy my experience at all. So I'd gotten to the end of my program and I was like, well, might as well finish it now. There's no point in, you know, kind of rerouting and doing something else. But it is nice to have to confuse people with when you work in college athletics. So with that, I started looking for other opportunities to continue, not only continue my education, but gain work experience in collegiate athletics. So that's how I ended up at the University of Oklahoma. I was an Athletics Diversity Council graduate assistant. We are a group that these positions are set aside for minorities and women to apply for and just kind of have that coming in every year in the athletic department. There's two GA positions every year. I got to work in several different departments and just kind of get a feel for what I liked, and I ended up liking event management the most, and that also happened to be where I met my future Big 12 boss, which Maria's on the call. I got to meet her through volunteering and volunteering some more and then volunteering again, and then I was like, you know what, I really want to work for you all. I really want to see what championships and conference office like life is like. So I graduated with my master's in adult and higher education from Oklahoma. I moved back to Dallas and I worked for the Big 12 for a year as an intern. Had some amazing, amazing, amazing experiences. So I would encourage you all to intern whenever you can, because you never know what you're going to get out of it. And after the completion of my year, the position at the RMAC came open. So I applied for it, and I have been here since July 2017. And I was promoted to assistant commissioner in December of 2019. So just this past December. So that is me. So we'll just dive right into it. Like I said, I chose this topic because I had a conversation that just didn't sit well with me on people not knowing what their options are in college athletics. And I know some of you may be like, oh, how do they not know what their options are? Some people don't. Some people don't know where to look, don't know what to do. So I'm going to touch on a little bit of all of those things, where to go, what you can do, different opportunities, and some things that I've learned along the way. So let's start out with collegiate. Collegiate's probably the one that you all are most familiar with. There are a lot of things you can do when you work in collegiate athletics. I mean, all school sizes, all divisions, all associations, you know, it's amazing all the things that you can do. In the NCAA, there are, of course, three divisions. Between the three divisions, the numbers of like public versus private schools is pretty split down the middle. And in the NCAA, the spending on athletics tends to be a little bit higher as opposed to the NAIA. But some of the work opportunities at institutions are the same at NCAA schools versus NAIA schools. You still got your compliance administrator, you still got your director of athletics, you still got your event manager, you know, some of those people kind of on the ground still getting to work with student athletes. For NAIA, their schools do tend to be predominantly private. That just creates like a different set of rules for you. And really one of the biggest differences between NCAA and NAIA is just the overall governing bodies. They just differ in how they, you know, how they govern themselves. So, and then there's also NJCAA. Now this was one that, because I did not go to a junior college, I didn't know a whole lot about it. I had to do a little research. And one of the things I did learn about them is that they do have administrators, but they typically also double as a coach. So, you know, if you are wanting to coach and you're like, but I really want to kind of keep my feet on both sides of it, a JUCO may be a great option for you because you can get that administrative work there too. So I think that's great. And as far as like working opportunities, you've got institutions, you've got the NCAA, like the NCAA, NAIA, and NJCAA, their offices have staffs where you can work there too. You can work on their championships and all of that. And then you've got conference offices, which is what the work that I do. Now for conference offices, we specifically oversee our institutions. Like we have a role in the national governance structure, but we still kind of answer to the NCAA, but compliance wise, there's a lot of things that come through a conference office before they go on to the NCAA. So specifically for the RMAC, my schools are in South Dakota, Nebraska, New Mexico, Colorado, and Utah. So we're kind of all over the place, but regionally, we all serve each other's needs. So in my position, I oversee business operations, championships, scheduling. I oversee our Arbiter, which Arbiter is the website that we use to schedule and pay officials. I also kind of oversee some of our office management projects like new carpet and new furniture. So those are also the things that I get to do at a conference office. And if there's one thing that I would leave with you all when you're deciding between these different groups, sometimes the smaller the school, the more the responsibilities. And you can take that either way. You can take it as, man, I don't want to do all that. I just want to focus on marketing, period. Hey, that's fine. That's what the Division I schools are here for institutionally, or the larger conferences. But if you're like, I really don't know what I want to do, which is me, I can do a lot of things. Let me see what the smaller schools have to offer and where I can kind of take on more responsibilities. So I think that's an important thing to think about when you're looking at where you want to go, what you want to do moving forward. So the professional industry. So say you're not a fan of collegiate athletics, or you don't want to work with student athletes, which is understandable. Sports come in all shapes and sizes. You always have pro sports as an option. Now, I just chose the big four for this slide, but I mean, there are tons, and there are some that are constantly growing and in need of more people to come and work for them. In my research, I specifically went to the Philadelphia Eagles website. I don't know why. And there are a lot of positions very similar to what Division I schools have to offer as far as work responsibilities and roles. One of the things that baffled me is that they have carpenters on staff. Like, I mean, that's how much staff that these larger organizations have that you can look at, you know, what you might want to do there, because there's a lot of opportunities. Additionally, if you don't want to be involved with a pro team, there's facilities. Some teams don't own their facilities, so it's separate. So then you can look at those facilities websites and see what type of work they have too. Mostly probably event management and food service or things like that, but there's still great opportunities, and it may be something that you're interested in. So I know I breezed right over professional, because professional sports was never one of my passions, but it is an option for people to look into. So now this one is a fun one for me, because so I'm currently located in Colorado Springs, which is also known as Olympic City, USA. I learned a lot about the Olympics and just kind of the Olympic movement while living here. And this is one of those areas where I kind of wish I would have known about it before I kind of went the collegiate route, because this sounds, every time I hear about some of their jobs, I'm like, oh, that sounds fun. You know, so I'm a huge fan of the Olympics. So it was great to move here and kind of learn about that. Anytime somebody comes to visit me, I take them to the Olympic Training Center. I've been like 5 times myself, and I act like it's brand new every single time. So these are the three groups that kind of contribute to the Olympic movement. So you've got the International Olympic Committee. They are way, way high in the sky, kind of watching, overseeing things. So a lot of their assistance comes from what they call the National Organizing Committees, which for us in the United States is the U.S. Olympic and Paralympic Committee. They recently just changed their name to the U.S. Olympic and Paralympic Committee to become more inclusive. But for now, I'm going to call them the USOPC, because that's a lot of words. So the IOC, one of the things they say on their website is that they have very specific jobs that you maybe would not expect and would not find anywhere else. And when I say they have jobs you can't find anywhere else, you really can't, because I tried to look on their website to see what kind of jobs they were, and they don't even have a staff directory. So that is one that if you're going to go for it, hey, go for it. It's big time, and it's a big deal, and their opportunities kind of come few and far between. So the other organizations, like I said, kind of feed into the IOC and help run the Olympics, and the USOPC is one of them. So they are focused on protecting, supporting, and empowering America's athletes, and they're responsible for fielding U.S. teams for the Olympic, Paralympic, and Youth Olympic, Pan American, and Para-Pan American Games. So they serve a wide community, and again, they don't do it on their own. Then you have the national governing bodies, which is the groups that I think that a lot of you might be interested in if you look into like what their missions are and what they actually do. So the national governing bodies are made up of all of the organizations that serve specific sports. So I've got a couple logos up here. You've got USA Track and Field, USA Volleyball, USA Triathlon, USA Wrestling. So when it comes time to, you know, select people for teams or to qualify for the Olympics, these organizations are the ones that are running it and overseeing that. And in addition to that, they're also the ones that sometimes travel to the Olympics with the teams to be there to assist with whatever. Now, they do run events all throughout the year, so it's not like you're kind of like on an every 4 year cycle for this job. Like, no, there's a lot that they do outside of Olympic years. And I mean, like now I'm sure they're getting ready for kind of adjusting training schedules and working on setting up new events for people to get ready for the Olympics being moved to next year. So like I said, the Olympic group is an amazing group. There are a lot of national governing bodies. If you find yourself like, man, I really like table tennis, there is a USA table tennis organization that you could intern with or you could look into or whatever type like that. So they're very specialized and very specific, but also they do some really fun work. So now that I've kind of gone through that overview, how do you find these opportunities? So this is where I got hung up when I was talking to the young man that I was talking to. He did not know about the NCAA employment page. That made me really sad because I'm like, how can you apply for jobs if you don't know about employment pages or nobody told you about that? So, I mean, as simple as it can be, the three organizations I mentioned for collegiate, they all have employment pages that don't just outline jobs at their own organizations, but that their member institutions post those jobs there as well. So, you know, make sure you're checking those regularly too. I know for me, I have alerts set up on the NCAA employment page because, you know, even though you have a job, you should never stop looking at other jobs. Alerts set up for when jobs come open. So like if you're wanting to be a graduate assistant and you're not sure what time of year those jobs get posted, set up an alert for all graduate assistant positions to send for them to send you an email every day when something comes open. I mean, that's essentially like all you have to do. And then you can start sifting through them and kind of seeing what you want to do. And then of course, institutional websites. If it is set on your heart that you want to work at Oklahoma State, I don't know why you would, but if you want to work at Oklahoma State, go to their institutional website and look at their employment opportunities. And then another site that's a good one to use is TeamWorks Online. When I was doing like my earlier job searching before I got this position, I was able to sign up for TeamWorks Online. They have different professional development events that they put on at, I think they usually have one at like the Thunder, Oklahoma City Thunder Arena. They'll have something there where you get to connect with the Thunder and all of that. So they've got those opportunities, but also a lot of the professional organizations and the national governing bodies, they post their jobs on TeamWorks, in addition to a lot of other organizations, but it is sports specific. Okay. So where do you start? So right now, maybe you're not looking for a job, and that's fine. But there's some work that you can be doing to kind of prepare yourself to step into a role. So just a little bit of my advice. Start reaching out to people. Go to websites that you are thinking might be, not websites, sorry, go to people's pages and their staff directories of organizations that you think you might want to work for. Look at people's job descriptions. Oh, what do they even do? Oh, I like that. Let me see if I can reach out to them. Now, reaching out does not mean, hi, I just want to say hi. No, you reach out and you want to communicate with them and you're very clear about, you know, this is my question about your position. How did you get there? You know, what do you do now? Or what type of work did you put in? What type of volunteering did you do? You know, reach out to them and ask them those kind of questions to see how they got into the role that they're in. Volunteer. If you're low on job experience, but you don't really have time to have a full-time job, volunteering is the perfect thing. I looked up where the school is, where Bacon is, and it's 50 miles from Tulsa. Well, Tulsa has been hosting the Big 12 Wrestling Championship the last couple of years. They need volunteers. That's the perfect opportunity to go and, you know, experience an event. Yeah, it's not, you know, it's not the basketball tournament. It's not those things, but it's a great opportunity to see an event and see something different. I will say the biggest thing I enjoyed about my time at Oklahoma was seeing all the different sports, because at WT, you know, we're a Division II school, we're smaller. We kind of have just the core sports, like the main sports. And then we've got like equestrian, which is super random. But when I got to Oklahoma, I saw men's and women's gymnastics. I saw wrestling. And I mean, those sports, they're amazing to watch and experience as well. And it's a great experience to have when you're applying for a job. So make sure you're volunteering and kind of reaching out. So I mentioned specifically the Big 12 Wrestling Championship, but there's also the Tulsa Sports Commission. Their whole job is to bring sporting events to Tulsa. So if they're bringing sporting events, then they have to be able to provide volunteers and all of that. So that's a great organization to reach out to try to get in with to start volunteering. And most cities have a sports commission. Again, another occupation in sports that you could occupy is working for a sports commission. You're never sports specific, but your goal is to bring sports to the town. But they also always need volunteers. So interning or doing a graduate assistantship. I went through my GA, and while I had a lot of work experience, I still didn't feel like I had enough to go get a full-time job. So I decided to intern. And while I had to do a lot of convincing to my parents that this is not a step back, it's a step, it's, you know, it's not even a lateral step. It's just adding experience to my resume and, you know, just kind of getting some new things on there and some new looks. Don't be afraid to be an intern. I know for me, though, I did have a clear line of I'm not going to be an unpaid intern. I'll be an intern, but I need an internship that's going to pay me something, because I couldn't convince my family that I should take an unpaid internship. So don't be afraid to step out and do that and kind of apply for those positions. I know I have an intern every year. I'm going to throw Maria on the spot. She has an intern every year. So you're meeting people now who could either help you with like, hey, I've got an internship spot open. You should apply. I'm not going to guarantee you're going to get it, but you should apply. But also, I know some other people who have intern spots open. You should apply, or you should reach out about this. So don't be afraid to intern in GA. And then finally, professional development. It's never too early for you all to start. And there are actually, you know, organizations who have been working on programming that's geared towards people at your level, GAs, interns, student athletes, whatever else it may be. One of the ones that I did really early on was I joined Women Leaders in College Sports. They say college sports, but honestly, there are high school level administrators and coaches coming. And also, one of the people that I know from USA Triathlon, she was going to their convention and kind of taking part of their professional development. It's just good in general. So Women Leaders in College Sports has the Women Leadership Symposium, which is specifically for entry level and below employees. It's in Kansas City every year, which this year I don't think they hosted it like that. It costs like $100 and you have to pay for your flight and your food outside of what they provide during the professional development sessions. But they also, they cover your hotel room too. Now you do have to room with somebody you don't know, but that's kind of part of the fun of it. So Women Leaders in College Sports is a great organization to get a part of as a young woman in the industry, if you want to start making connections and kind of getting that early professional development. Right now, honestly, right now is an amazing time to be in college athletics. COVID-19 did a lot of negative things, but the one really big positive that I've seen is a lot of people are making their stuff free. Like they're making their webinars free, they're making their workouts free, they're making whatever free. And there's no shortage of free webinars right now in college athletics. So be on the lookout for those and join them, because why not? Like, I mean, what else do we really have to do right now? And again, it's free. So make sure you're joining those, or at least on the lookout for joining those. And then finally, the other organization is NACTA. Now, NACTA is very college specific, and there are like 20 organizations that fall up under it. So I'm sorry, but you're going to have to do your NACTA research on your own, because there is a lot that NACTA has to offer. And they have a lot of specific like organizations. Like there's MOA, and that's Minority Interests and Opportunities. Then they've got CABMA, which is focuses on business. And then they've got CEFMA, which focuses on events and facilities management. So there's a lot of those organizations in there that you can join. And again, as a student, as an intern, as a GA, you don't have to pay what we pay to join those organizations to be a part of that. Sometimes they're only $50 for the year. And I would say that it is worth it to kind of step in and get in on those organizations. So I just added some fun pictures from my time at OU and then, of course, my time at the Big 12. And the bottom right picture, it's an important picture because all of these women are amazing. But if that doesn't illustrate why we need you all in the industry right now, I don't know what else would. That is me and all of the other, or a lot of the other female administrators in my conference. Currently, I'm the only Black administrator, period, in my entire league. So I guess I show you this picture to also say, like, don't get discouraged in the process of looking for jobs or trying to break into the industry, because you're necessary and you're needed. And it's, I mean, it's going to take a minute, but hey, you know, nothing ever great came easy. So yeah, so those are the things that I kind of wanted to go through with y'all. That's really all I have. Do you all have any questions?
I don't know about questions, but I think I'll add to when we start talking about, I think today's most of our participants are going to be those that are in the field currently. And so are those looking maybe to move into the sports field. And so I think even at our age, as we get older, that we're never too old or too experienced to still participate in volunteer experiences. And so I think there's a number of us on here that met through the Big 12 volunteering in some form or aspect. And so I think that's important. I think that even at my age, and I'm still really, really, really young, but I still volunteer. And so I still go up and I help with the Big 12. And so I think, Maria, did we decide it's been year 10?
Yeah, I don't think you should lie to people and tell them that you're really, really young, though. But
continue. That too, Maria.
Watch out, y'all. It's your friends. It's your friends. And so I still go up and I volunteer. And again, I oversee athletics where I was at. And in prior to where I'm at, because I've been here since August, I was still involved with athletics at my institution with AD Rogers as a faculty athletic rep. But because I love sports and that's where my passion lies, I still had to feed that part of me that wasn't getting fully fed anymore. And so I have been volunteering with the Big 12 for about, as we mentioned, 10 years. And outside of that, it has led to other opportunities, not only within the Big 12, but also with the NCAA. And so with NCAA, through the Big 12, I've been able to cover a women's Final Four for volleyball. And I think one for a Final Four for basketball, and then numerous NCAA regionals with them. And prior to COVID-19, had secured a paid position with the NCAA to be their floor manager for their Dallas regional. And then also have been secured paying positions to host a Big 12 clinic before here in Oklahoma, where we served over 120 youth. And so I think that even as we get older, those internship opportunities or those volunteer opportunities still become important in how we build connections and how we can also begin to utilize our connections to help our students or to help those that are around us. And so I think even as professionals, we still are able to provide that opportunities. Do we have any students on the line? No?
I have a question.
Yes, Maria.
Of course.
So it kind of speaks to, Nicole, what you had mentioned. In my experience, it seems as though a lot of jobs within sports especially, I feel like sports is extremely unique for how important it is that you know people in order for them to advocate for you to have jobs. A lot of us know that when a job comes online, there's probably already someone who has been tabbed to take that position, and making the job posting public is kind of just like a formality. So can you kind of talk more about the different positions that you got through your career, and what type of relationships and establishing of relationships that was required with attaining those positions?
So I hate to be this way, but I feel like I'm an anomaly in that kind of situation, because I was really fortunate that I like blindly applied for the RMAC position. I didn't even tell the AD at my alma mater, who probably could have called and put in a good word for me. I was really fortunate that they were just willing to look for somebody who just was somebody different. Like, they didn't need to know somebody to put them in the position. So I'm really fortunate for that. For my internship with the Big 12, as I mentioned, I've met Maria through my volunteering while I was at Oklahoma. And so during that time, I got to know their intern and was, I mean, bombarding her with questions about what she did and how she liked it and how she liked her bosses and were they mean and were they crazy. And I found out that they are some of those things, but they're also phenomenal. So I was able to make those connections and kind of stay on their radar and stay in contact with them. Because I think that's the biggest part of it is you can make connections. Like, y'all can talk to us on this call right now, and that's great. But if you like don't reach out after, or you don't do a follow-up call with anybody to see if you could pick their brain about whatever it is that's, you know, burning for you, you're never really gonna make the connections that you need to make. So, like I said, I'm not the best example of that because I did go into a lot of applications blindly, but I also applied a lot of places before I got my position at the RMAC. So
I'm gonna correct you just a little bit, because you are a very good example of building relationships. Like, you did volunteer at Big 12 events, but it was your work ethic and your personality that really put you on the radar of myself and Dana, who's my boss. And had you not had that that infectious personality and also coupled with that work ethic, you wouldn't have been on our radar and you wouldn't have been the number one choice for the internship, which eventually helped open other doors. So I would just like to say that you are a very prime candidate and product of creating a relationship and allowing that to work in your benefit.
Y'all, she's trying to butter me up because I bet she's about to ask me for something when we get off this call.
I don't need nothing from you, girl. Hush up.
No, but thank you, Maria. Yeah, I definitely, I mean, you know, you have to talk to people. You can't just show up. Hard work is part of it, but also, like she said, you know, talking to people and just kind of just also just being yourself. That's a huge thing that I push myself to do. I try not to put on whatever facade that, if I can be candid and this can be a safe space, whatever facade that the University of Oklahoma was trying to teach us that we had to have to be professionals in this industry. I had to break out of that and decide that I needed to be myself, and myself got me, you know, my later positions, my position at the Big 12 and my position at the RMAC, and it continues to allow me to grow in my current role and take on some other responsibilities and join some national committees. Like, I mean, you really do have to be yourself, but also work hard at the same time. Would anybody else that's in the industry like to speak to kind of how they made the connections and how they made their moves?
I'll add in on the discussion. There's one book I'm reading right now called The Secret Thoughts of Successful Women. And it's all about people that suffer from like the imposter syndrome. And I think that that's something that you can also find a lot in this industry too, is, you know, maybe you didn't play at the Division I level, but you want to get involved in the industry, but for some reason, you know, there's something holding you back because you think that you're not good enough in that way. And, you know, I think a lot of volunteer work, like just because you weren't getting paid doesn't mean that you're not qualified to later on be in that position. And so, you know, I think a lot of people end up not applying for different positions or not applying for something because they have that imposter syndrome. And I think I really had that. I just didn't know how to like articulate it until I kind of was reading about this. And so I think that that's something important to keep in mind as like you're going through the professional development process is, you know, you have all of these little things that you have to get through, paid or not paid. And like, there's a reason that, you know, you were chosen or maybe not chosen for that position, and, you know, it ends up working out in your favor regardless. So.
And I like to speak to that a little bit, just so you know, is it Kibler? Did I say it right? Coach Kibler is from Linfield, and she is the women's lacrosse coach. And so just wanted everybody to kind of know who everyone is.
Thanks.
And I would definitely agree with that. So I taught undergrad for 8 years, and a number of my students were athletes. And so, again, they are balancing that concept of athletics and as well as academics. And so they didn't have a lot of time to go out and get the experience that probably they would need once they got out. And so what I tried to do was through coursework, I'm very much hands-on. I like to learn through experiences and stuff. And I think that's the way that my students learn best. So I try to get them involved in different things within the community and within our institution as far as organizing recreational sports. And then, of course, they all had to do an internship. And the thing that I found when they got out is they felt like if they weren't going to grad school, they felt like they didn't have any experience, any real hands-on job experience. And so what I've tried to get them to do is understand that everything that you've done in class, you have 15 lesson plans from one class. After you take four classes, that is, you know, we're looking at 60 lesson plans. So when you go to apply for that job as a physical education teacher, you already have an array of lesson plans that we can list as experience. So no, you've never went out and actually had to teach a full class or done student teaching because you're going the alternative route, but you have those experiences that you're able to put on there. Anytime you went on the community, they should be there. You know, if you did, if you were the chair for the recreation intramurals, then you need to put that on there. And so I think that she brings up a good point. I know we have a lot of educators and athletic personnel people at collegiate level. And I think that's important as you're guiding these young people, is that no, you do have experience, and how can we utilize this experience that you have or those transferable skills to make sure that they are aligning with the position that you're wanting to pursue. And so I'm glad that you brought that up. And I think that can be beneficial even for us. I know there are a few people on this line that are making that transition either from the sports world to another area, or even you're in an area and you're wanting to get back into sports. And I think a lot of that experience is there. You just don't see it because it's not labeled how you think it should be labeled. But a lot of those skills are transferable, and they can make you be very successful on the other side of the realm. So I appreciate you saying that, Coach.
I think it's all about perspective too. And like, sometimes like when you're in the process, you kind of get blinded by like, it's easy to get into the negative hole of like, well, I don't have this, I don't think I have that. But like, it, as coaches and leaders, like helping students, it's like, well, remember, you did this and you have this. And like, if you look at it from this point, like you can build your argument, but you know, they just might need our help to like help get them there. So perspective and a little bit of confidence goes a long way too. Fake it till you make it. I think that's always a good rule.
Yeah. I have to give props to Lindsay. Like the imposter syndrome is so real. That's something I experienced in my PhD program and even now as a professor, but, I wanted to give props to Lindsay because she's just been such a great just ally in person. And we're actually planning to talk to our student athletes at Linfield on Friday. And we wanted to open up an invite to anyone out on this call that we want to talk to them about kind of all the things that are going on with the protests and the murder of George Floyd, and just what they can do and just really make a space that they can talk about these issues and what it means to be anti-racist. And, you know, and honestly, where I think we're pushing a lot for our coaches to join, because some of our coaches are like still saying like, oh, I don't see color. So we want to really kind of open their eyes as well. So definitely wanted to throw that invite out before I know we're getting close to time.
So we're in Oregon, Linfield's in Oregon. And so we're hosting a discussion, and if any of y'all would love to get on with us, you feel free to send us an email. I can put my email address in the chat, but we're just hosting a discussion for the student athletes at Linfield, where, you know, I personally don't feel like they have enough exposure to, you know, race in general, I think, being like where they're located and their community. And so we're just trying to help, you know, advocate and put out as many resources as we can. So feel free to join us.
Thank you for the invite. Yeah, if you'll drop it in there, or I'll get the information from Natalie when we get off as well and share with the group. Natalie, you want to tell a little bit about what you do so we know who you are? I think we have new people on. So.
Oh, yeah, for anyone here. I'm originally from the Cherokee Reservation in North Carolina. Grew up there. All my family's Cherokee, or, you know, like I like to call it generic-y sometimes, just because that's a very common claim when people make a claim to Native American heritage. But I love these sessions because it's a great for me to reflect. And like, for me, when I went to college, that was when I like was really exposed to African American culture. I went to Tennessee, and Tennessee was very, very white and black. And then when I went to grad school at UCF, that's when it felt like I was a more international focus. And so I opened my eyes that way. And I just think that any minorities, women, like, we have to really work together and stand together. And it's not so much like the race and the sex, but it's the power systems that are set up and like the systematic things in our culture, I think. And I'm out at Linfield now, and been lucky to meet Lindsay, and we share a lot of the same interests and want to just help educate not only our students, but then our colleagues as well. And really excited to be a part of this. And Kristen, I'm going to share if we're able to share the presentation, I want to share it with all my sport management students, because I think you hit the nail on the head with so many points that I always am trying to.
Yeah, my team too.
Yeah.
Awesome. And I'll include my notes, because like I said, it's mostly notes. The PowerPoint was just me on track. But I do have just one more thing before we kind of go away. And it's just a quote that I wanted to leave you all with. It's been a huge one for me, because like I said, I work on being my authentic self. Like, that is one of my number one goals about working in college athletics, because I think it is very easy to lose yourself, especially when you work in the predominantly white areas of college athletics. Because I mean, I don't know how the HBCU administrators, how they fare, or how the Bacon College administrators, how they fare. But I know for me, it's a battle every day to like make people accept me for my braids or my natural hair or whatever it is. So, you know, if I didn't define myself for myself, I would be crunched into other people's fantasies for me and eaten alive. So that's just kind of what I want to leave you all with. And like Dr. Bean said, I can tell you, I don't turn down a meeting with a student or anybody who wants to ask me questions. I don't. Maybe it's because I'm young in the industry and maybe I don't have enough work to do, or my boss may tell you I don't have enough work to do, but I never turn down a meeting or a call. So Lindsay and Natalie, if your student athletes want to reach out and want to kind of talk about it, I'm all for it. And anybody else on the call, if you want to reach out and talk, I'm here.
Thank you so much. Do we have any last questions or thoughts? And Natalie's being modest. She also has a podcast that you should all go listen to.
Creative Native on iTunes and SoundCloud.
So she is heavily involved in research as well. So she's being a little modest right now, and she's actually going to be our next speaker. So I'll send you that information. As was mentioned, the PowerPoint that was shared today, for you all that are wanting to share with your students or your student athletes, the recording will be posted online. And so you'll be listening there, or if you want, we can have Wendy, who's online with us. She's our public relations coordinator. She can also send that out. And then I will also share the PowerPoint with you all in the follow-up email where I share everyone's contact information. Anybody else have any? Go ahead,
okay. Amber. Kristen, I graduated from the University of Oklahoma as well, so I just wanted to get in contact with you. Do you have an email address?
Yes.
She does. And so I'll send an email out afterwards. Sorry. And it will include all that. It'll tell you, thanks for coming. Here's our contact information. It'll include her email address. And then I'll also include Natalie and Lindsay's email address if you want to join that. So I will follow that up with the email that will provide the information with you. And you're welcome to go ahead, Assistant Commissioner McCowan, and share that if you want to now. But I will be following up with the email if it's easier that way for you, Amber.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, awesome. I'm fine with the follow-up email. But that's all I've got. Thank you all so much for joining us today. This is like literally only my second time ever presenting to people about athletics stuff. So super excited to get this experience and to share it with you all. Such an amazing group. And thank you for kind of indulging me at the beginning and having a conversation about what's really going on. So thank you all for your time. Thank you, Dr. Bean. Thank you, Baycombe College. Thank you, thank you, everybody. It's just a time to be thankful for some things.
You are welcome. I'm so glad that you were able to come on here and speak to us today, and even providing that open platform for people to voice their opinions and their feelings and kind of gauge that. And so I think that's appreciative as well. I think you asked kind of how we're gauging it. Again, we're a tribal institution, and so we were founded to serve Native Americans. And I think if you begin to look at the similarities between both of our groups, you see that we're in full support of this anti-racism or this segregation and this patriarchal, this is me speaking on my own terms, not Baycombe College, system that has kind of been put in place. And so I think somebody mentioned the systematic issues that we have. And so we too have those concerns. And so again, I appreciate you allowing some space for that stuff to be shared. Any final thoughts as we wrap up before we end today? All right. Well, again, we appreciate you taking time, and everybody have an amazing day. I'll share that contact information. If you have any further questions, feel free as well.